From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for January 31st. Yes, the last Sunday in January of 2016. This is our weekly look into the politics that shape our lives, from what happened last week to what's on tap in the days, or, in the case of the Iowa caucuses, the day ahead. So time to grab the Sunday paper, that hot cup of coffee, and we'll try to launch you into a good week. Well, you heard Susan Berkus give us the newscast. Dave is out on assignment. He's getting the newsroom Zamboni oiled up this week to take advantage of the heat wave that we're having here in Chicago. Actually, Susan, we know Dave and his father are on a road trip in Florida. And, of course, only Dave would pick one of the warmest weekends so far in Chicago to head down to Florida.
I know. And we're just we're glad that Dave and his dad have not made the news. So they're safe. But I don't know what the weather is in Florida. Maybe it's about the same as up here. Who knows?
Wouldn't that be great? I mean, I'm almost thinking maybe we should take a collection up. And I love Dave dearly. But if we can have weather like this in January, take a collection up and maybe we can have Dave make me have an extended stay in Florida.
Well, we would miss him.
Yes, we would.
We would definitely miss him.
He could call in.
Are you thinking that our weather is good because Dave is not here?
Oh, I would.
Is that what we're thinking?
You must be reading something into my comments.
Okay.
No, actually, yes. I think that's very much to do with it. I think there is a correlation here. And, I mean, it's gorgeous out. Yesterday it was great to see people were back out on Michigan Avenue, and I didn't see anybody in shorts, so nobody was that crazy. But it was, and even today, I was out on the WGN Storm Center patio, and I'm just wearing, you know, my hoodie here, and it's perfect out there.
Exactly. And as we were talking about off the air, it's grilling weather. No
yep.
reason not to break out the grill.
Indeed. And yes, there will be some grilling later on. We'll be firing up the grill for, I think, some steaks tonight. But you said there's a chance of rain coming here.
Right. About a 70% chance after 4 p.m. today. But, you know, it's still warm, an umbrella, the grill.
It's the grill, yes. A little rain shouldn't dissuade anybody from firing up the grill.
We're still Chicagoans, after all.
Exactly. And I know, you know, enjoy this weather while it lasts, because I was looking at Mike Hammernick's forecast, and later in the week it looks a little kind of yucky.
It does. We start to get a rain-snow mix, I think he's saying on Tuesday later in the day, probably just in time for the rush hour.
Right, and that will be the carryover probably from Iowa, where I believe there's already like a blizzard watch posted.
Really? And,
yes.
And that's in time for the Iowa caucus?
Iowa caucus,
oh, my
yes.
goodness.
So that could add a new dimension to the first-in-the-nation caucus. And although they're very hardy out there in Iowa, I know those folks, and the dedicated ones will vote, but it'll be very interesting to see what kind of ramifications some bad weather has. And it kind of looked to me like the forecast, and we'll be talking much more extensively later in the show about the Iowa caucuses, but it looked to me like the forecast was that the snow was going to hit around Des Moines in central part of the state. But when you and go east, and so although now I'm looking at a national forecast here on the monitor, and they're saying that storm may actually arrive later Monday in Iowa. So,
uh-huh.
So we'll see what happens there. But the way the storm was tracking, it kind of looked like it was Des Moines and heading east, and that's actually, believe it or not, goes more to the Democratic votes Northwest Iowa is the more, and Western Iowa are more solid Republican votes. So,
well, Trump's confident.
Yes, he is.
Either way, snow, no snow.
And in fact, he's already, I mean, he's been up tweeting for a few hours already on Twitter, attacking Ted Cruz, of course. Ted Cruz is totally unelectable if he even gets to run. Parentheses, born in Canada, unparentheses. We'll lose big to Hillary. Polls show I beat Hillary easily. Win. Exclamation points throughout. That's 6 minutes ago from your Donald J. Trump update.
Well, do you think that's really him, or do you think that it's part of his machine?
No, I think it's really him.
Yeah.
I really do. I do believe
it. It sounds like him.
That's what I mean. It's too much like him. And truly, I think I've counted already since I get up early on Sunday mornings, I think about 6 insults already thrown.
Really?
Yes. One of the Reverend Bob Vanderplatz, who's a very big evangelical leader in Iowa, who has endorsed Ted Cruz. And so he's attacking Bob Vanderplatz. I mean, it just goes nonstop. It's going to be a very interesting Monday and Monday evening out in Des Moines.
It is. You have quite a lot to look for and think about and talk about, and you have a great show coming up today too.
Yeah, we're going to spend the 8 to 9 o'clock hour talking all about the Iowa caucuses with a roundtable, and of course we encourage you all to join the conversation, 312-981-7200. Actually, and we have our own WGN crew out in Iowa with the Steve Cochran Show is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And also Ro Khan is out there. So they'll have plenty from the Iowa Events Center, the Media Center out there, and all kinds of guests out there. And it is they're in a great location because it is like one-stop shopping for political junkies out there in that Iowa Events Center. So a very, very kind of interesting dynamic coming up here.
No road trip for you.
No road trip for me. Nope.
Have you ever gone?
This is the first caucus I'll have missed in, I think, the last 5.
Oh, wow.
So, there's plenty of work to be done here in Chicago. And, in fact, you'll be seeing that in your Chicago Tribune in the days ahead this week as we had a little bit of a project that we've undertaken and in your Chicago Tribune and ChicagoTribune.com. So you'll see that. I also want to alert everybody, too, to a new feature that you can get through the Chicago Tribune through its Clout Street blog. That's our political blog on the Chicago Tribune. We now have a morning newsletter, The Morning Spin, kind of cleverly named, I guess. But you can sign up for morning emails delivered to your email box that let you know kind of what's on tap for the news ahead and the political day and some things you may have missed, and kind of a look at, too, at what the Tribune political team is doing, what they're reading. So you can find that at chicagotribune.com. Well, Susan's here to keep us up to date on all the news, traffic, and weather. Producer Jasmine is fielding your phone calls, and you can reach us at 312-981-7200. You can also text us at 312-981-7200. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin, on Twitter at @SundaySpin. And engineer Bob is here. He's studying the manual, What the Heck is a Caucus Anyway? Just a reminder, of course, as always, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com, and you can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching Rick Pearson. Well, coming up, we've got a great show today. After the 7:30 news, my good friend Amanda Vinicky joins the show. Amanda is the State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio and WUIS-FM in Springfield, and we'll discuss last week's State of the State address by Governor Bruce Rauner, as well as the plans for President Barack Obama to return to Springfield and address the General Assembly. And then after the 8 o'clock news, as I said, we're going to spend a full hour with a roundtable counting down to the Iowa caucuses. I've got some great guests. Matt Strawn, the former Iowa Republican chairman, will join us from Iowa. Robin Johnson of Monmouth College and host of Talking Politics on KBUR AM radio in Burlington. He'll be with us. In studio will be Roger Ruthart, the managing editor of the Argus Dispatch in Moline, Rock Island. And, of course, my friend and recently retired colleague Bob Sector will join the show as we're just hours away from tomorrow's caucuses. That's all coming up, but first we're going to take a quick break. This is the Sunday Spin. Good Sunday morning. Welcome to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, and you know, it's time for our spin through national politics, and you know, the polls are all over the place. Who will show up on caucus night? Lots of questions, and of course, we'll get the answers Monday night. But of course, the biggest news out of Iowa over the past week was Donald Trump's decision to boycott the last Republican debate before the caucuses, all because he didn't like Fox News' Megyn Kelly. So he hosts a veterans benefit, raises $6 million, he says. Doesn't say where the money's going, of course. But here's Donald Trump.
Look at all the cameras, like the Academy Awards. This is like the Academy Awards. This is the Academy Awards. We're actually told that we have more cameras than they do by quite a bit, so that's sort of interesting. And you know what? That's really in honor of our vets, but they have been. They've been very nice, and they wanted me to go and apologize and everything else, and they did apologize, and they could not have been. But once this started, it's for our vets. There was nothing I could do. I don't know. And you know what? I don't know. Is it, for me personally, a good thing, a bad thing? Will I get more votes? Will I get less votes? Nobody knows. Who the hell knows? But it's for our vets, and you're going to like it because we raised over $5 million in one day. Over $5 million. So that's not so bad.
Who the hell knows, as they say. So, well, Florida Governor Jeb Bush, his super PAC burning through millions of dollars, he's trying to get some attention by telling ABC News that Donald Trump is not a conservative.
Well, Donald Trump's not a conservative, and you need a conservative to lead the conservative party into the general election. He's not a conservative based on whether it's gun rights or abortion or taxes or spending or a single-payer system for health care. And you can't insult your way to the presidency either. He views this as a sign of strength that you disparage women, Hispanics, POWs like John McCain, or the disabled. And we're not going to win an election by preying on people's angst and their fears and insulting people. You got to get to 50. And you do that with a solid conservative record, with conservative ideas to change the course of the direction in Washington, D.C.
Now, of course, we all know that in these final hours, the bromance between Donald Trump and Texas Senator Ted Cruz is definitely over. Here's a Ted Cruz ad going after Donald Trump's New York values.
I mean, hey, I lived in New York City and Manhattan all my life, okay? So, you know, my views are a little bit different than if I lived in Iowa.
They are different, like on abortion.
Would President Trump ban partial birth abortion?
Well, look, I am pro-choice in every respect.
And what does Trump think about Iowa?
How stupid are the people of Iowa?
Donald Trump, New York values, not ours.
You know, my views are a little bit different than if I lived in Iowa.
I'm Ted Cruz, and I approve this message.
Now, sounding a similar theme, a new super PAC led by an aide to Mitt Romney is also going after Trump in an Iowa ad.
How much do we really know about Donald Trump on abortion?
She would not ban it.
No.
Or ban partial birth abortion.
No, I am pro-choice in every respect.
On health care.
Everybody's got to be covered.
Universal health care.
I am going to take care of everybody.
Well, who pays for it?
The government's going to pay for it.
Trump's even praised Hillary Clinton.
Hillary's always surrounded herself with very good people. I think Hillary would do a good job.
Can we trust Donald Trump?
So there are already the high criticism being leveled there. And, of course, we had the Republican debate minus Trump, and it seemed like it was almost an alternate universe. No name-calling, the most substantive discussion by far. But, of course, there was the elephant not in the room. Here are some highlights from the debate.
I'm a maniac, and everyone on this stage is stupid, fat, and ugly. And, Ben, you're a terrible surgeon. Now that we've gotten the Donald Trump portion out of the way.
Hillary Clinton this week said Barack Obama would make a great Supreme Court justice. The guy who systematically and habitually violates the Constitution on the Supreme Court? I don't think so.
Look, I'm an establishment because my dad, the greatest man alive, was president of the United States, and my brother, who I adore as well, is a fantastic brother, was president. Fine, I'll take it.
I will apologize to nobody for the vigorousness with which I will fight terrorism, go after ISIS, hunt them down wherever they are, and utterly and completely destroy ISIS.
Don't worry, I'm not leaving the stage no matter what you ask me.
Good.
And second of all,
we need to stop allowing political correctness to dictate our policies, because it's going to kill us if we don't.
Drug use is about equal between white and black, but our prisons, 3 out of 4 people in prison are black or brown. I think something has to change. I think it's a big thing that our party needs to be part of.
But can you name even one thing that the federal government does now that it should not do at all?
Yeah. You want one?
I want one.
Yeah. How about one that I've done in New Jersey for the last 6 years, and that's get rid of Planned Parenthood funding. Bigger than that, let me tell you something. When you see thousands upon thousands upon thousands of children being murdered in the womb, I can't think of anything bigger than that.
I am the son and the grandson of immigrants, and I know that securing our borders is not anti-immigrant, and we will do it. This is the lie that Ted's campaign is built on, and Rand touched upon it. That he's the most conservative guy, and everyone else is a, you know, everyone else is a rhino.
Those are some highlights of the last Republican debate. Meanwhile, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, a past Iowa caucus winner, he's far back in the pack, though he does have a super PAC, and they've been launching ads in Iowa as well.
It's hard to watch. It's as if they forgot they're running for president. An office held by great men, Lincoln, Eisenhower, and Reagan. Let's get serious. We're electing a president, Mike Huckabee, a governor for 10 years who balanced budgets, cut taxes, created jobs, improved education, led through crisis, fought corruption, and made tough choices. A serious conservative leader and man of faith who you can trust.
That's from Mike Huckabee's super PAC. On the Democratic side, with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders battling it out, a new ad targeted the Vermont senator. But the ad was courtesy of a super PAC headed by Joe Ricketts of the Chicago Cubs family. And Ricketts is a strong conservative.
Senator Bernie Sanders has some very big plans. Bernie wants to provide free college for our young people. No tuition. Completely free. Now Bernie's doubling down with Medicare for All, which is basically single-payer, government-sponsored health care. No big insurance companies, just more government spending, paid for by raising taxes on Wall Street, big business, and the super rich. Senator Bernie Sanders, too liberal for Iowa.
That from the Joe Ricketts super PAC attacking Bernie Sanders. So if you're in Iowa, you're hearing all kinds of advertising going on. And, of course, we'll be talking about that in the 8 o'clock hour with our roundtable of guests as we talk about the Iowa caucuses. But up ahead, we'll be discussing the State of the State address that Governor Rauner presented to Illinois, as well as the upcoming visit of Barack Obama to mark the anniversary of his announcement for running for president of the United States there. Right now, though, we're going to take a quick break. This is the Sunday Spin. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, my good friend Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio and WUIS-FM in Springfield, as we talk about last week in Springfield and the state of the state, such as it is.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and this is your Sunday Spin. I was just out on the WGN Storm Center patio, and I have to tell you, it's gorgeous out. I mean, yes, I know the sun isn't out, and you know, kind of hazy and not drizzly or anything, but it is absolutely gorgeous out. No excuse to light the grill. As I address that directly to Bob, the engineer. It's time to get the grill lit, okay? I closed out the last segment with the Super PAC ad that was being run against Bernie Sanders. So I thought for equal time purposes, Bernie Sanders is delivering his closing ad to Iowa.
There are those who say we cannot defeat a corrupt political system and fix a rigged economy. But I believe we need to lift our vision above the obstacles in place and look to the American horizon. to a nation where every child can not only dream of going to college, but attend one. Where quality health care will be a birthright of every citizen. Where a good job is not a wish, but a reality. Where women receive equal pay and a living wage is paid to all. An America where after a lifetime of labor, there is time for rest and grandchildren. A nation that defends our people and our values, but no longer carries so much of that burden alone. I know we can create that America if we listen to our hearts, and that journey begins here in Iowa. I'm Bernie Sanders. I approve this message, and I ask you to join with us at the caucuses on Monday night. Thank you.
Of course, Amanda Vinicky, you can tell it's an uplifting ad because of the music in the background.
Yes, it was. It is a little bit waking me up this morning, a little bit. Oh. You know, I have to say, Rick, I recently took a long weekend and headed down to Nauvoo, Illinois, in the Quad Cities, just because I had never been there. And being across the river in Iowa, just to even go out to eat, not even to watch a football game or anything, but just being around the TV, and I had my fill of all of those ads in a matter of hours.
It does not take long. This, of course, is Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio and WUIS-FM in Springfield. And Amanda, thanks for getting up with me this morning. I appreciate it.
Sure thing. For you, anytime.
Well, that's very, very nice to hear. And yeah, it is, and we're going to spend the 8 o'clock hour talking a roundtable about the Iowa caucuses, and you know, even driving in that part of western Illinois and northwestern Illinois, just even listening to the radio is mm-hmm. you know, it's just nonstop. And we'll have Roger Ruthart, the managing editor of the Argus Dispatch in the Rock Island Moline area on, and he'll definitely be filling us in on all the advertising that's going on. But I wanted to speak to Amanda this morning about the week passed in Springfield, a week marked by the second State of the State address by Governor Bruce Rauner. And we talked about earlier about Donald Trump being the elephant not in the room by not participating in the debate. And the elephant in the room, but not really touched upon in that speech, was the fact that here we are entering another month without a state budget.
Yeah, it was, I think, pretty incredible that he didn't address it. And there are some groups that are angry about that. So, you know, Democrats kind of wondering, and then social service groups that were outside, you could hear some muffled protests throughout the speech, and they were, have been demanding a plan, continued to make that throughout the State of the State address, but the only reference that we got was all of us in this chamber had a difficult year in 2015, which I think many people would say is an understatement, as we debated a budget with structural reform. That was pretty much the only time that Governor Bruce Rauner even made mention of the stalemate in any sort of true fashion. And even that wasn't just the budget. It was coupled with code for his turnaround agenda. And that is what he means by structural reform, and, you know, didn't give any sort of plan. I did, of course, ask some Republicans, and they say, just hold up February 17th. There's a budget address and we'll get all of that. But I think there's just this frustration because how can you talk about the state of Illinois right now without mention of that? You know, tomorrow will be month 8. And of course, Illinois has never been anywhere near having gone that long in the past. And as I said, the social service providers that are affected and universities kind of wondering, hey, wait, what's up over here? We're just supposed to keep on waiting and waiting and waiting.
And of course, there was no backing down of those, quote, structural reforms, the what the governor calls his turnaround agenda, the pro-business union weakening efforts that he's trying to make part of a condition for moving forward with any budget.
No, there was no backing down at all. I guess there was a backing down in the rhetoric. We didn't actually hear him use the phrase, for example, turnaround agenda. But he continued to talk about and make the case that redistricting and term limits need to occur. And he said, hey, you told me you're two, closer to an election year for that. Let's go. I'm ready for those constitutional amendments. He continued to say, use the phrase, a grand compromise, which is something we've heard from him before, that this is all one part of a big package. Of course, he did use the word compromise, mutual respect, those sort of things. So as I said, turned down the rhetoric, but really did continue to make all of his demands for the for the elements that really Democrats say they're not ready to back away from. Talked again about prevailing wage, collective bargaining when it comes to property taxes. And he doubled down some, I would say, on AFSCME. There was a full chunk of the speech where Governor Rauner went after what he said were their demands that were out of touch with reality. This is, of course, as he has moved to declare an impasse in negotiations with the union that represents most state employees.
I know a lot of attention, and something, frankly, I gave a lot of attention to was the tone of the speech, particularly in the fact that in the days, weeks leading up to this speech were very much kind of a campaign-type-oriented use of rhetoric by the governor, sharply criticizing House Speaker Michael Madigan. Yet in the speech, he didn't address Madigan by name. And in fact, some Republicans were saying, well, see, he is adopting a softer tone. But, you know, we've kind of seen this before.
Right. You know, we've seen him go waffle a little bit, I guess, on how harsh he wants to be with Michael Madigan. I think it's clear that his position on Madigan and Rauner placing really a huge part of the blame for where Illinois is at and using Madigan as a representation of all that is wrong in Illinois. It's clear he really believes that, I think, or at least he wants voters to believe so, but he just didn't use this particular speech to do it. So that's where I'm not sure that Madigan swallowed it. That was pretty evident as soon as he had an availability after the fact and answered questions from reporters and continued his skepticism of the turnaround agenda. He continues to say, yeah, I'll work with the guy. I will be polite. It does not, you know, give back really the name calling. He would maybe have a spokesman do a little of that and had, you know, compared Rauner to Blagojevich a bit. But it was really more that I think this focus and tone, you had to do that, we as reporters, because it was such a shift from even really like 2 days before. On Monday, Rauner had made comments about Madigan in that fashion. So part of it would have been, to have gone before a joint session of the General Assembly. And there are more House Democrats than there are any other member of the General Assembly caucus. So to go there and to insult their leader in that fashion in what's Madigan's chamber, because Rauner's giving this speech in the Illinois House, would have been pretty incredible. I mean, that would have been the story that we all wrote. And we were all watching and waiting because of the comments that he has made, because he does seem to say at every turn the state of the state is Madigan's fault, that we were waiting for that. But the administration clearly making a point to soften the tone. And it's, I think, going to be a matter of, okay, how long is that going to work for? Because maybe it is that he believes he'll get farther in negotiations by not publicly lashing Madigan at every turn. And he's gotten advice from his frenemy, we'll call him, Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel on that, and President Cullerton saying, hey, maybe not a wise point to start negotiations with somebody by running commercials, calling him a crook, which is somewhat what Rauner did with Madigan. But there was no actual apology during this speech, no recognition of, hey, I know I've said a lot of harsh things, but I want to start over. It wasn't that. It was a softening of the tone, middle of the road, and we'll see how long it lasts and if it works, if in fact that is the intent.
Well, and you mentioned Mayor Emanuel as well, and he did not directly reference the mayor, who in the days leading up to the speech he labeled as a failure, as someone who was tone deaf. But he did say in the speech he criticized, he said there was some growth going on in the economy in the Chicago area despite the financial mismanagement of the city and Cook County. So he still couldn't help himself on that.
Oh, no, no. He was, I actually have this speech in front of me. So here it was, yes, there has been growth thanks to the, they've been able to overcome the, quote, financial mismanagement that is now strangling Chicago and Cook County. So as you noted, Rick, he just couldn't help himself. And, you know, I mean, I think that there are a lot of people who cheerlead that and say, yeah, he's right. This is ridiculous. And they don't want Rauner to back down. That's why they elected him. Then I think there are plenty of voters who elected him for, yeah, some change, but maybe not this variety of change. They wanted somebody who would do something, who'd take action, who was the supreme negotiator and had business sense, when in fact they say, all right, 8 months in, businesses don't like that. This is terrible. And this isn't what we were expecting out of you, Governor. And then, of course, there are the Democrats and unions who are in Pat Quinn himself, who has had a sort of mini rehab tour that I think is in the I told you so phase of, hey, we warned you. He didn't like unions and he tried to say that he wouldn't during the general election. But look, this is how he really feels. And so I don't know. Do you want a governor who, as is seen with the Trump candidacy, there is an appetite from voters of somebody who will tell it like it is and tell them what they really feel. And sometimes, though, maybe when they say what you really feel, that's going to present give you a really divided public.
We're speaking with Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief, Illinois Public Radio, and WUIS-FM in Springfield. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm speaking with Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief at Illinois Public Radio and WUIS-FM in Springfield. We're talking about the past week in Springfield, the governor's State of the State address. And Amanda, I got a text from someone who has a question about, since the Democrats have a veto-proof supermajority, why wouldn't they just go ahead and pass a budget? It's someone who's unsure about what the dynamics are going on. Help us out, will you?
Yeah, you know, and that is a really good question and one that we as reporters continue to ask the legislative leaders. And first of all, they would say, we did pass a budget. That actually happened in May. So they say the reason Illinois is in this place right now is because Governor Rauner took his veto pen to all of it, save for the money that goes to schools. And he did not use, they say, his constitutional ability and authority to go through, and if he thought it was out of balance, take charge and cross out line items or make reductions in spending. He's the one that says he's open to a tax hike but isn't willing to do it unless he gets his way on structural reform, because he says that'll just lead Illinois down this wrong path. So, okay, go ahead, they said. We've passed our priorities. We want you to work with us on revenue and go ahead and do it. He didn't do that. And they, however, never did call for an override of those vetoes. And actually, even this week, I know I asked that question to Speaker Madigan. All right, hey, but you never called him for an override. We've heard this now for 8 months. And he said, well, yeah, we don't have working super majorities. And he didn't get into a lot of detail, but part of this is that you have a couple of Democratic representatives who go their own way, much as Madigan is known for control. And people say often, hey, if push came to shove, he could get them on board. This, a tax hike isn't one of those things that they want to be on board for. these couple of members say we aren't going to go along with a budget that is admittedly out of balance, and some of them don't want a tax hike either. Then you have this Representative Ken Duncan from Chicago, who is on a bit of an island, most if not.
But he's well prepared. He's well prepared for that island. He's got his sleeping bag. He's got his backpack. One of the most bizarre uses of props I've ever seen at a statehouse press conference was Ken Duncan coming into the blue room down at the state capitol carrying a sleeping bag and wearing a backpack and carrying an insulated bag with a bottle of water and a bar of soap.
Saying that he would camp out in the Capitol until there is a budget, but if you listen to those words, always be careful when you listen to what politicians say and parse carefully. He said, I want all of you to join me. So I did not stay overnight in the Capitol myself, but just a couple of hours after that, I walked by the House Speaker's office where Mr. Duncan had said that he was going to stay, and followed up with the Speaker's office. And no, there was no camp out there of Ken Duncan or otherwise. So despite all of those props, I'm not sure he got any good use out of them.
and indeed, someone tweeted a picture. It looked like it was taken in the kind of the tunnel that connects the Stratton office building with the state capitol, and it was Duncan along with several aides, and it was the aides who were carrying the sleeping bag, the backpack, and the insulated cooler. So be careful what you
for the long night ahead.
Be careful what you wish for going to work in Springfield. So what do you think? Where do things lead? We talked about we've got the governor's budget message coming up. It seems to me there's a lot of chatter about obviously having to acknowledge the lack of a budget, that what may come here is now let's look at a 2-year budget.
That is a lot of the chatter that I'm hearing, and really it's getting to the point where maybe Illinois doesn't have, you know, much of a choice. I think, again, that's going to be really frustrating to a lot of people. Even those that have received funding are wondering, okay, what are we going to get for next year? How do we make decisions? We need to plan our budgets ahead. So much of what the state sends is, you know, contingent on these other areas. It's really left a whole lot of confusion. And again, that would, of course, be unprecedented. Illinois has never been in this sort of situation, but with a primary election coming up rapidly, and then you have the general election that is on the horizon, there is a lot of doubt as to when Illinois will be able to come together and make these controversial decisions, despite Rauner softening his tone and also offering sort of olive branches. He's characterized them as that to particularly Senate President John Cullerton on pensions and on looking at school funding, though Rauner in his speech basically acknowledged that he doesn't want just what Cullerton wants, because he doesn't want suburban schools to take any sort of cut. Not that Cullerton wants that, but just the changes in a funding formula. This plan would be because Illinois doesn't have a ton more money, not to leave everybody hold harmless, but to get some additional money to the schools that are really in need, where they don't have the local property tax base to be able to properly fund them. So, you know, this is all in the works, and yeah, it might just be a budget that goes retroactive as well as looking ahead.
You know, when we talk about and take a look at this dysfunction, and I know he was before your time, you young thing, but
no.
The passing of Phil Rock last week, and it just, you know, when I look back to the Phil Rock years, and I've even mentioned in the obituary about people, critics as well as supporters, referred to him as, and here he is, the Democratic Senate president, referred to him as Republican Governor Jim Thompson's floor leader many times. and it just shows how the dynamics of Washington and the dysfunction of Washington, the kind of winner-take-all mentality, really has now infused itself in Springfield, which part of the reason I always like covering Springfield was the fact that you did have people, and you're seeing it now and people reacting to Phil Rock's death, is you had people that actually, yeah, you'd play politics when you had to play the politics, but then there's also this thing called statesmanship, And that seems to be something that's sorely lacking these days.
You know, I, as you noted, had never had the opportunity to meet, interview, or cover Phil Rock. But in reading some of the stories about him and just the characterization, I think a lot of Illinois residents probably pine for something like that. That is somebody who, you know, quotes would say he got things done, fair-minded, less vitriol. And there's so much of that right now in Springfield. There is not just the hyper-partisanship and the lack of getting things done on a basic level, but there's also the spending. And that is, of course, a big contributor. We talk about, for example, Representative Duncan, he just got a lot of money tossed toward his race by an outside PAC that is supposedly here to help Democrats that make decisions that are more pro-business and against the status quo and seemingly against Madigan. And that has been seen by some as a sort of front for Rauner, who obviously has a ton of his own money downstate here. A Rauner-affiliated money is being poured into a race of the sole Republican that didn't stick with the administration on a vote that would have that Rauner really wanted regarding AFSCME again. So there's all of that. Duncan, I should mention, also having ads run against him, it seems, by Madigan's side. I mean, there's just all sorts of money, and it gets really tough to shake that hand and make a deal when there is so much distrust, number one, and number two, when everybody's, you know, looking over their shoulder at every turn, wondering when something that maybe they say in a moment of honesty or crossing the aisle is going to be seen not as a, hey, we applaud you, we're going to include that in your obituary, is something that is a quality sign of statesmanship, and instead will be used in an ad or in a brochure trying to keep you from returning to Springfield.
That's really the true state of the state when it comes to Springfield. Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief at Illinois Public Radio and WUIS-FM in Springfield, thanks very much for joining me this morning.
Sure. Have a great rest of the show, guys.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll have an hour roundtable talking about tomorrow's Iowa caucuses.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, and I'm joined by Roger Ruthart, managing editor of the Argus Dispatch, Moline, Rock Island, and Bob Sector, my recently retired colleague, member of the Chicago Tribune's political team. And on the phone is Robin Johnson, a Monmouth College professor and political strategist and host of Talking Politics on KBUR AM 1490 in Burlington, Iowa. And Matt Strawn, former Iowa Republican chairman and founding principal of Next Generation Public Affairs. Gentlemen, thank you all for getting up with me this morning as we count down the time to the Iowa caucuses. And I want to start first with Matt, who's on the ground in Des Moines. And during our newscast, Susan Berkus had the latest weather forecast for Iowa coming in. And in fact, our Mike Hamernick had it looked like a blizzard watch already being posted in some parts of Iowa. How big is weather a factor for the caucuses?
Well, good morning from Des Moines. And yeah, I was amused last night at a number of get-togethers around town where the only people worried about the weather seem to be the reporters from D.C. and New York that didn't understand that we're Iowans. This isn't a big deal for us. We, you know, we own a pair of boots. We own gloves. It's okay. So it really isn't that much of a concern. And the latest reports I've seen, most of the weather won't start hitting until late evening, most likely after we've wrapped up voting at our caucus sites.
So if you were talking about the concerns of D.C. and New York-based reporters, you must have been at the 801 Chop House last night.
I was, right after the unveiling of the Iowa polls. So It was. And then the other thing that amuses me is most of them are also worried about trying to get out of town Tuesday morning and make their way to New Hampshire. So that seems to be driving a lot of the discussion here is whether they will be, quote unquote, stuck in Iowa for an extra day.
Hey, there are worse things in life, believe
exactly.
me. I mean, that's ridiculous. Well, you touched on the Iowa poll, the Des Moines Register poll. Ann Seltzer, who's the great pollster for the Register, and I just want to go over the numbers here. In the Republican side, Donald Trump 28, Ted Cruz 23, Marco Rubio 15, Ben Carson 10, Rand Paul 5, Chris Christie 3, and then all at 2 are Jeb Bush, Carly Fiorina, Mike Huckabee, John Kasich, Rick Santorum, uncommitted, 3% are not sure. That's the Republican side. On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton, 45, Bernie Sanders, 42, Martin O'Malley, 3, uncommitted, 4, and not sure, 5. Robin Johnson, what do you make of the Trump factor in Iowa? I know you just recently spoke to him on your radio show.
Yeah, I think, I interviewed Sam Clovis last summer in June, and Sam is a conservative activist in Iowa, and he talked about the anger at the Republican base. When I asked him about Trump, he said if Trump gets in, he thought it would be a great thing and that he would drive the debate, and he certainly has. I think he speaks for a lot of the working class vote. His support is highest among those folks without college degrees, people who feel that they've been left behind in the new economy and are very concerned about terrorist attacks. When I had him on his show, Rick, quite frankly, some of the things he talked about, I asked him about trade and about relations with China. His answers were those that could have come right out of Bernie Sanders' speeches. I think one thing that maybe hasn't been discussed enough is that will he attract some Democratic and union support? I've seen polls that suggest some of that. It may not be now in the primaries, but it could certainly be next fall if he's on the ballot as a Republican nominee or perhaps as an independent.
Well, Bob Secker, we started the show off this morning noting, of course, that Donald Trump did not take part in that last Republican debate and even played a cut from Trump at the veterans benefit that he held as counter-programming, where he said, I don't know what the hell, if it's going to hurt me or not. What do you think?
Well, you got to remember or try to parse why he did this. And I know the excuse was that it was Fox News and Megyn Kelly being nasty to him. But there was a strategic reason behind it. This way he gets more attention and he draws attention away from the other debate. He had nothing to gain from being in that last debate. He would have been pilloried by the other candidates. And despite what he says, his debate performances haven't been that great.
He's won every online
yes,
poll.
Yes, I know. I don't know if you know this, Rick.
Yeah.
But he says a lot of stuff that just is kind of not true.
Really?
Yeah. There's clearly we've talked about this before, in this post-factual world that we're in, there's a disconnect between what people say on the campaign trail and facts, truth, logic, whatever. And, and Trump and Cruz to some extent really epitomize that. And,
Okay, get it off your chest.
Oh, right? No, the thing that was so amazing to me, that this whole ginned up phony controversy about Fox News was there's an irony to a literary irony to it. You've got Donald Trump attacking, having a fight with Fox News because they were not nice to him and not fair, and Fox News being the aggrieved party here, or Donald Trump being the aggrieved party, depending on the way you look at it. And here's this news organization, which really isn't a news organization. It's a spin machine that gins up controversy, and the two of them are fighting with each other. It's kind of hilarious.
It kind of reminded me a bit like Rob Blagojevich making Dick Mell a sympathetic
figure
in some respects. We're talking about the Iowa caucuses with our roundtable. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Joining me are Roger Ruthart, Robin Johnson, Matt Strawn, and Bob Sector as we spend this hour talking about tomorrow's Iowa caucuses. And Roger Ruthart, managing editor of the Argus Dispatch, I wanted to ask you about the advertising. I had Amanda Vinicky, my friend from Illinois Public Radio, on, and she mentioned about traveling through western and northwestern Illinois, and she said all it takes is a couple hours of watching television, and you've had your fill of advertising.
Yeah, I mean, it's mind-numbing. It's, you can see the same ad six times in 1 hour, and often back-to-back-to-back, you know.
The same ad?
Well, maybe with some other candidates' ad in between. But you can get, like, four ads in a row, and they're all campaign ads. And I mean, it's great for the media, I'm sure, in our area. I mean, the Quad Cities is a large media market. It covers western Illinois and eastern Iowa. And several years ago, I guess it must have been 4 years ago now, we our newspaper did a story on looking how much campaign money was spent in that market, and it was over $22 million, as I recall. So,
and that was 4 years ago, and that was just one party.
Yeah, I mean, well, there was a heavy Senate race with Joni Ernst in Iowa,
right?
And there was the Republican or the gubernatorial thing going on in Illinois and all that, but. It's, you know, when you're one of us who is left behind after everybody leaves after the caucuses, you know, it's interesting because you look at it from a totally different perspective. I think it was it Chuck Todd who compared the caucuses to athletics, you know, the sporting event. And really for Iowa, I think every 4 years, it's like having the Super Bowl in the state.
Well, on that point, we've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yeah, good morning, Rick. You know, I read a poll recently, and it's stated that 50% of the people think that Iowa now has maybe undue, you know, influence with this early election. And it could be also because the demographics do not necessarily represent the demographics of the country. But also, I know we saw what it did for Barack Obama, but there's also been candidates who won that caucus and went on not to win the nomination. But just overall, where do they think people's feelings are with that, and would there ever be any changes with the caucus of Star Disability? Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Ron. And let me start with Matt, because as a former party chairman, you know, and no doubt that question consistently comes up about, does Iowa have too much undue influence? And just from my point of view, I always appreciated Iowa because of what was then the retail nature of campaigning, although that now seems to be going bye-bye. Matt?
Yeah, well, there's a lot to unpack there, but Ron, and you put your finger on part of my answer already when it comes to the demographics of the state. I think even as a Republican chairman, the fact that the Democrats elevated somebody like Barack Obama 8 years ago in the state, you know, I think illustrates the, you know, just because somebody may not look like a large majority of Iowans doesn't mean we're not willing to consider them. So, you know, I don't buy the demographic arguments. On the Republican side, the Iowa Republican Party is exactly a window into what the National Party is going through at that particular time. I saw it 4 years ago when I was party chairman, where even on caucus night, when we had effectively a tie between the establishment wing of the party, the movement conservative wing of the party, and then coming up very quickly in the rearview mirror, in third place was the ascendant libertarian-oriented piece of the Republican Party. And I think what you're seeing 4 years later today is, again, a pretty accurate reflection of where the National Republican Party is right now, an establishment that is gasping for air and is kind of on its back trying to figure out what in the world is actually going on, an anti-establishment fervor and some degree of coalescing with more libertarian and movement conservative anti-establishment types. And then, of course, we've got this Trump-sized factor looming out there that we're all probably going to learn together Monday night whether this is something that we've just all enjoyed as entertainment over the last 12 months, or if there really is some currency with new people in the process who will actually show up and vote. Because, and Rick knows this, and your smart listeners who have been listening to us talk for a year know that this isn't a process where you just go in over your lunch hour and throw in a vote and go about your day. It requires a commitment. So if Trump can crack that code in voter turnout in a place like Iowa, it's going to be tough for him, tough to stop him going forward.
Robin Johnson, when we talk about Iowa and the caucuses, and a lot, I think there's kind of a national perception that somehow this is about picking a winner, when we know that it's more of a winnowing process that Iowa actually plays than necessarily picking a winner.
Yeah, I think the Democrats have been a little more successful in predicting winners than Republicans historically. But you go to New Hampshire next, which seems to have an honorary streak to purposely vote against whoever Iowa votes for. So, you'll go from Iowa to New Hampshire, which are two somewhat similar states in a lot of ways regarding diversity. Iowa, on the religious end, has more evangelicals, while New Hampshire's more secular. But then you go to South Carolina, which is totally different, and then Nevada, and then you'll break out into other states across the South, and then you'll come up to the Midwest in March and April. So it is a winnowing process. I don't see where on the Republican side you may have five or six be viable going into New Hampshire after Iowa. But, you know, it's funny, every 4 years we have this hand-wringing over Iowa if it should start out or not. And having participated in this process fully here, I think it's got to start somewhere, and Iowa's as good a place as anybody. The people here are good citizens. They take this seriously. And I think and the fact that one important statistic to keep in mind is that around, 30 to 40% make up their mind in the last week. So this thing could still change here in the next 24 hours.
Well, Roger Ruthart, you've seen the process before. There was used to be the old kind of adage that there's three tickets out of Iowa. But given the size of this field, given the ability of super PACs to kind of keep campaigns resuscitated in a way, although, you know, that's been an up and down kind of issue this year. But I see a lot more than three tickets on the Republican side coming out of Iowa.
Well, I think you have to look at, especially in years like this where you have no incumbent president running for re-election. I mean, you look back in history. Well, 4 years ago, I think Rick Santorum was the largest vote getter in Iowa, and it didn't do much for him. And the time before that was Mike Huckabee. And you go all the way back to the first time that Bill Clinton ran. Bill Clinton in Iowa got 3% of the vote, and I think finished fourth or fifth. So in those, especially in those years where everybody comes out of the woodwork and it's open season, I think it's a little bit different than it is some of the other years. But it certainly is a winnowing process, I think. The other thing that people don't tend to remember because of all the national media coverage, it ignores it. But this is, you know, this is a presidential primary system, and we're electing delegates. The total number vote doesn't necessarily matter as much as who's, you know, this is the beginning of the trail of collecting delegates to go to the convention in the summer. So there's been cases where the person who actually won the popular vote didn't actually win as many delegates as someone else. So there's a lot of balls in the air to watch at one time, I think, and everybody's going to have a different take coming out of here. But I think another key is, I think, look at which candidates are going to have the staying power when they come out of these early primaries. Which ones can afford to go all the way through, you know, 50 states? Which ones have the organization? And which ones are just in there with a hope and a prayer that, you know, if I do well in Iowa or New Hampshire, someone's going to come in and give me an organization and give me a checkbook to help me make it through the rest of the race.
This is our political roundtable on the Iowa caucuses tomorrow. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. We'll continue our discussion on tomorrow's Iowa caucuses with our political roundtable.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin and our special pre-caucus eve roundtable. Joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio, Roger Ruthart, managing editor of the Argus Dispatch, Moline Rock Island, and Bob Sector, recently retired from the Tribune's political team. On the phone is Robin Johnson, Monmouth College professor and political strategist and host of Talking Politics on KBUR in Burlington, Iowa, and in Des Moines We've got Matt Strawn, former Iowa Republican chairman and founding principal of Next Generation Public Affairs. Bob, I wanted to turn to you. We've talked about Republicans, the question of the Trump factor, those kinds of things. But, you know, when you look at this latest Iowa poll, Hillary Clinton 45, Bernie Sanders 42, roughly the margin of error here. What's going on here? I mean, we all remember 2008, and, right. You know, she was the prohibitive favorite going into Iowa, and, of course, Barack Obama won. John Edwards narrowly edged her out for second place. Everybody thought this was going to be kind of the reboot, the restart, the new Hillary.
Yeah, she's been around forever is part of the problem, and she's, she is a more traditional politician, and this is the year that you can, you know, being a little edgy, being, you know, a non-traditional politician actually gets
you
points.
The outsider.
Being the outsider gets you points. You see it on the Republican side, and you see it on the Democratic side, at least with Bernie Sanders. I don't think Martin O'Malley's got much traction. But, O'Malley, it's kind of a strange analogy, but he's the bright new shiny object here, Sanders, and he's saying things, to some extent that are sort of the mere opposite of what the Republicans are saying. You know, he's saying, I'm going to give you free college, and we're going to have health care for all, things that are, and he's not saying how he's going to pay for much of this, but unless he's going to raise taxes dramatically. But he's appealing to a group of people who, again, aren't really, they're not picking through this stuff and thinking, well, okay, that sounds great, but, you know, how are we going to pay for it? How is this ever going to get through Congress? I mean, they're not making those kind of calculations. Hillary Clinton, it's more boring, it's more pedantic, I guess, but she's saying, look, you know, you have to have ideals, but you have to be realistic about them, and that's not as sexy, that's not as exciting a message.
Robin Johnson, a form of truth and consequences.
Yeah, I think the key is going to be just obviously turnout on this, and Sanders is appealing to people that don't traditionally get out and participate in caucuses, those that have never participated before, independents and young people, and he's got a I forgot the catchphrase, is it, but go home for Bernie something, where they're going to bus people from college campuses to their homes to caucus there, because the critical thing is to have organization throughout the state. And that's where those rural areas, that's where that could give Clinton the advantage in defeating Sanders, is Sanders' support to some degree will be based in especially in three counties in Iowa that have college campuses, Blackhawk, Story, and Johnson. So it'll be interesting to see if Sanders succeeds there. The big the question is turnout and whether he can duplicate what Obama was able to do back in 2008, which I don't think so. You know, all the polls and all the TV – I actually talked to several Trump and Sanders supporters, and you just get the feeling they come up to me and ask me, well, have you been to a caucus? And I have observed them. I'm not an Iowan, so I haven't actually participated in one, but they're asking me questions, and I just get the sense from talking to them, and this isn't scientific, it's just anecdotal, that there's a measure of trepidation, that they don't know what to expect, and I think ultimately that may hold down the turnout of these folks and maybe give the edge to Clinton and Cruz tomorrow night.
Matt, what are you picking up as far as turnout on the ground there?
Yeah, and speaking on the Republican side, which is a much simpler process, the difference for your listeners between the Republican caucuses and the Democratic caucuses here, ours is a simple secret ballot, and our ballot is we're literally handed a blank slip of paper and we write a name on it, drop it in a box, and it's counted there in front of the room. And the totals of 1,681 precincts across the state are aggregated, and boom, there are your final results. Of course, the Democrats, it's not a secret ballot. You have to stand in preference groups. You have to have a 15% viability threshold to be eligible to receive delegates. So when Robin talks about the importance of an organization across the state with the Democrats, that's crucial, because Bernie Sanders can put 3,500 people in a building in Iowa City in the heart of the University of Iowa campus, but that precinct still may only have six delegates at the end of the day. as opposed to, you know, little dotted rural Iowa precincts that may have one or two here and there. So Clinton certainly has an advantage in that regard. But with the Trump factor, which is so fascinating here, and I know Robin knows when Donald Trump was down in a place like Burlington, Iowa, which had about 600 Iowa Republicans caucus 4 years ago, there were 4,000 people that showed up at Donald Trump's events there. And even extracting, you know, the folks that crossed over from the border, if Donald Trump is turning out even a sliver of these new people coming to his events, he can dramatically remake the caucus electorate. So the number I would watch on turnout, we had 121,000 4 years ago when I was chair. Ted Cruz's support, those folks turn out every 4 years like it's their job. That's the core of his support. So the higher that number climbs above 121, the closer we get to 135,000, 140,000, the more likely it is that Donald Trump is having an excellent night on February 1st.
Well, Roger, you know, that kind of leads to that fundamental question that I think a lot of people have been asking all along, but I also think it holds true not just with Donald Trump, but also with Bernie Sanders, is, you know, how much of it is the let's just go see him versus to actually show up and go through the ritual that's involved for a caucus?
Well, and that's one thing I think you have to keep in mind when you look at some of these appearances that they've made. I mean,
both sides, Trump as well as Sanders, it's all about the crowd count, you know?
You know, it is, but I think in part of this in campaign is that there are places you can go where there's 100 or 200 people and you can actually get as close as you or I are and maybe be able to ask a question or two and get a sense of whether you really like this guy and agree with him or not. But then there's, from our part of the state, the biggest turnouts have been for Bernie Sanders. And you go, well, let's see, are those people that voluntarily came there, were they bussed in? You know, are they campaign workers or paid, you know, the senior citizens that are coming in for a meal or just, you know, what is this? And one other thing I think that's important from what we've seen, an important asset that Hillary has that I haven't seen anybody else have, and that's the ability to trot Bill Clinton and Chelsea Clinton out there. Chelsea made an appearance on behalf of her mother in Davenport. They had to move it to the baseball stadium because there were so many people that wanted to come here. Chelsea, I mean, she's appealing, I think, to that young voter base, too, in some ways. And Bill, regardless of what you want to say about him, I think he's an asset as her spouse. These other candidates don't have a spouse that's good that they can run out there and have 1,000 people show up just because Bill Clinton's in town.
But is Bill Clinton still
just like Trump? I mean, it's the celebrity factor.
Well, but that goes to the same question I asked Roger. How much of this is the celebrity, the entertainment factor? And this kind of goes to what I kind of launched the conversation about Iowa about, was that it looks like the era of that kind of retail campaigning, Roger, that you were talking about, you know, going to Pella and the coffee shops and those kinds of, it now just seems to have been replaced because this is the era for a number of these candidates, not all, but for a number of these candidates, that's a bygone time, and that it's all about packing as many people as you can into a room rather than do the meet and greet. Bob?
Yeah, and you know, it is a shame because, you know, I think Roger said something about how this is the Super Bowl for, I don't know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's. But some of us think of it more like spring training for campaigns. And they, these candidates get their, historically, have gotten their first taste of how to interact with people, interact with voters on a one-on-one basis, and some of those personal interactions are very telling about who they are. Has Trump done any of that? I doubt it.
No, I'm not aware of it.
Yeah. Rick, I was going to say that the really interesting thing here for us political scientists is, you know, there's more on at stake here than just who wins and loses. A lot of long-held assumptions about campaigning in Iowa are at stake as well. Do you have to do the retail politics? Trump certainly hasn't done that. He's focused on Twitter, on these statements. He's dominated the news coverage from day one. He's had rallies, not the little town meetings, but rallies. And he's called in the news shows, and the media has put him on and repeated it. It's always been said you have to support ethanol subsidies in Iowa. Ted Cruz opposes those, makes that a major part of his campaign plank. We'll see if he's able to succeed. And then the role of money in super PACs. You know, Jeb Bush got out to a huge lead in fundraising early, and his super PAC's blown through, what, $40 million? And he's at, what, 2 or 3% in the polls? So there's a lot of assumptions being tested here on campaigning in Iowa that I think are going to be very interesting when we do the post-analysis.
We're talking about the Iowa caucuses with our political special political caucus eve roundtable. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson on Iowa caucus eve with our political roundtable. And kind of using what Robin Johnson from Monmouth College said as kind of a base about how this caucus could challenge a lot of our assumptions from having seen caucuses before, even challenge perhaps some of our assumptions on polling that's being done. And you know, kind of this era of conversion from telephone to internet, the digital age, that kind of thing. But I want each of you in the time we have left to give us some predictions here. And I don't, as I tell everybody, people ask me for predictions, and I say, if you want predictions, ask Tom Skilling. He gets paid a heck of a lot more than I do. Robin, let's start with you. What do you think's going to come out of this, Robin? Okay, I guess we drop Robin for just a moment. We'll get back to him. Roger.
Well, I think what I'm looking for, I'm interested in seeing how well Bernie Sanders can do in getting the turnout. I think that's a big issue. The Clintons, they've done this before, so I think their organization will be in place and get people to the caucuses. But Bernie will do well if he can turn his people out. So I give the a slight edge to Hillary Clinton, and a bigger edge if she does a better job of getting her people out to the caucuses. On the Republican side, I think what I'm watching there is he had a Republican governor, long-term governor in Iowa, who came out and said don't vote for Cruz because he opposes ethanol. And so there's an interesting balance there about among the farm community, I think, whether the more religious right is going to support him for that reason, or they're going to oppose him because he wants to kill their main export.
All right, Robin, we're back with Robin Johnson. Robin, prediction time.
You probably thought I was trying to duck that question.
Yes, I did. Yes. I know you so well.
When predicting elections, I go back to fundamentals, and the fundamentals go back to the ground game. And I think Clinton has an advantage because they got a head start. They've got some very seasoned veterans. Even the Sanders people admit that the Clinton ground game is probably superior. I think Clinton wins, but I think it's within 5 points. The Republican race is tougher. Cruz has the solid, committed folks at the grassroots level. I'll take Cruz on that basis, but I'm not going to be surprised if Trump pulls it off.
All right, Matt Strawn.
Yeah, I'll take the other half of that bet, Robin. some of the same thoughts. I think it's going to be really close. The trend lines for Cruz have not been good over the last week and a half. Not just the attacks from Governor Branstad in the renewable fuels industry, but he's taking fire from Rubio, who is trying to finish a strong third. He's taking fire, of course, from Trump, and you know, those of us that have been around this business. At this point in the process, if you're trying to maintain just what you have instead of trying to grow your vote and raise your ceiling, that's not a good place to be in, even though without question he has the strongest organization. So I'm going to give a slight edge to Trump going into caucus night that these new people will turn out. Don't know how many, but it'll probably be fairly close, but I give the edge to Trump, and I would give the edge to Hillary Clinton on the basis of a statewide deep organization.
Matt, just an addendum. Is a third place good enough for Marco Rubio?
Boy, a strong third place. He needs to perform a little better than the numbers we saw in the Iowa poll. And it's just astonishing to see the collapse of what we would call our center-right, more establishment vote in that Iowa poll with Christie at 3%, Bush at 2%, Kasich at 2%. It's going to be difficult for Rubio to get the kind of lift he needs to really finish a strong, strong third.
Bob Sector.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that I think in a month from now, you're going to look at Iowa and say, what was that all about? I mean, it's and that traditionally has been the case. It's just, you know, there's all this hoo-ha and to and fro and screaming and yelling, and it produces great headlines. But
sounds like the Tribune newsroom. Yeah.
Yes. But it, you know, in the end, it, you know, reality sets in at some point, and this is, you know, the race is going to be decided elsewhere other than Iowa. It might be a little winnowing, but in the end, what happened in Iowa will probably not matter that much.
Well, let me just ask you this, and Matt kind of touched on this too, about the center-right establishment candidates. Is it a matter, do you think, that, you know, this is one where the establishment is looking down the road for turning back Trump?
I think they're praying down the road. I mean, more than anything else. Yeah, where that is, I'm not quite sure. You know, you go on to New Hampshire, and you know, perhaps I don't know what the poll numbers are up there. That's a more traditional primary, but. And then you go down south, and if Cruz is still a factor, that still could be a problem for the party. But, you know, the party is turning ever more rightward, and that's where the base is. So I don't know if the establishment can stop him or not, or can stop Cruz if he takes off.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for taking part in our roundtable this morning. I appreciate it. I know that the listeners learned a lot about the caucuses, and it's going to be a very interesting Monday. Thanks again for joining me this morning. We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Amanda Vinicky from Illinois Public Radio, Roger Ruthart, managing editor of the Argus Dispatch Moline, Robin Johnson from Monmouth College and WBUR-AM in Burlington, Iowa, and Matt Strawn, former Iowa GOP chairman, founding principal Next Generation Public Affairs, Bob Sector, my good friend, recently retired from the Tribune's political team. And now we have a special show coming up. Jim Toronto's in for Dean Richards.
Yes, Dean is gallivanting somewhere, I believe.
Iowa?
Is
he caucusing?
He's not caucusing. I think he's bon vivanting.
Caucusing or concussing?
I think he's Clooney-ing. I think he might be interviewing George Clooney.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. So, but wow. Yeah, I'm very excited. I was listening to your discussion. I love politics. If I wasn't doing filling in for Dean today, I'd be watching Face the Nation or Meet the Press or Sunday Fox with Chris Wallace or State of, you know, all those shows. I love.
But you don't politics. You don't need that with us.
No.
See, we do the politics, well, done, so you don't have to.
Well, you're done at 9. Then I would watch those.
I see. See that's good that you clarified.
See, that's nice. Yes. Save. Just like Tony Esposito. Nice save.
Nice save, yes. You're pitching a shutout.
All right, so far. Yeah, wait till about 12:30 when they go to the bullpen for the righty.
Jim, have a great show.
Thank you, Rick.